Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 295 of the Roguecast, recorded June 9th, 2020. Demonic Sex Book. We're back on what is our bi-weekly, occasional, not every week schedule.
I mean, the world's on fire, Randy. I mean, we can come around a table and talk about it every time we can.
The world is on fire. It's ridiculous. Every week of 2020 is seemingly increasingly bizarre and weird.
I'm glad you say week. I talk like hour to hour at this point.
Yeah,
every time
true.
I look at my phone, something has either...
Oh, don't look at your phone. There's only bad news there.
I mean, we're murder hornets. I'm expecting Cthulhu to show up at some point.
Yeah, man. Things are weird, but we're plugging along. The store is back up and running. We're here 7 days a week, 11 to 7. Everybody is staffed here. Anna and Max are both here a couple days a week.
Yep.
Nick, Dave, and I are back on, not full-time schedules, but close to full-time schedules.
Yeah, we're open 11 to 7 every day.
Yeah. We are having people come in, which is great. We're definitely starting to see a pattern of at least sustainability, if not where we were before all this. We definitely, if you are listening, could still use the help. So please come support us, tell your friends, shop local. Very much appreciate it. We are just kind of trying to dig ourselves out from under the hole.
You know what's helpful, though?
What's that?
We have new comics.
Yes, we do.
They're starting to come back a little bit.
So not only that, we have new games and stuff. That's one of the notable things. Like, one of the things that's happening is there's been a lot of people using this opportunity to make big changes, which is not my favorite thing.
No.
But I understand it. And one of the big changes that happened that's kind of invisible to a lot of our customers, I think, is that Asmodee, who are one of the big game companies, they have Fantasy Flight and Days of Wonder and...
if you play or own a board game, you own something that Asmodee owns.
Yeah, Asmodee is like a big chunk. They bought up a bunch of the market, and then they had been exclusive with Alliance, which is our local distributor, and they have just recently gone direct. So we ordered a bunch of stuff from them. So that's headaches for us. A lot more ordering headaches. But one of the nice things is we've been getting a little thin on card game supplies.
Yep.
Like, there's a lot of people who like to sleeve their board games, and those have been discontinued. Well, they have a new line called GameGenics, and we went all in and ordered a bunch of them. So we've got, 10 different colors.
Yeah, we've got what they call their prime sleeves, which are, like, the colored ones. Then they've got board game sleeves, European style. They've even got sleeves specific for games, like Seven Wonders and Dixit, and I feel like there was a couple of
a few others. Catan has one.
Yeah.
Basically, specific card sizes they're taking care of. And also, they have, like, some cases, like nice cases and then bigger cases.
Yeah, if you're a Magic player, these cases are really cool because a lot of them have, compartments for dice and life counters. And there's even a giant one you can put in your mat along with all your Magic collection.
Yeah.
They are very swanky.
So we've got a big section. It's sort of a kind of like what we did with the D&D miniatures a little while back. We basically dedicated a part of the section to the store.
Yep.
So if you've been looking for board game sleeves or you know someone who has... put them our way.
The other cool thing about Asmodee is that we now are now completely stocked back up on Marvel Champions.
Right, yeah, that's been coming out and selling out immediately, and now we have both the core game, game mats, and then every expansion.
Which is awesome, and I hope more people check it out, because I've heard no one come back and say, this is a bad game.
It's
Everyone is super fun. Yeah.
It's a 1-4 player. I have a friend who played it just solo, just to play through it.
Yeah.
It's basically a storytelling game. There's, It's cooperative. You're working against villains, and they put out two different villain packs. So the base game comes with a few, I forget who all it is, Rhino and a few others.
Okay.
And then they put out a Green Goblin pack. They put out a Wrecking Crew pack. Hero wise, there's Black Widow that just came out today.
Thor.
Thor, Miss Marvel, Captain America, and I feel like there's one more.
Yeah, but it looks like a really cool game.
It is. It's a lot of fun, and it's nice to have that in stock. There's also been a couple new board games. A game called Santa Monica that's like a city-building game. Looks like a lot of fun that we got in. And, of course, we've got the D&D release is on its way. The next Theros is going to be on.
Yep.
There's a new Magic set that's done really well.
We got a few new Nulzers minis in.
Minis, yeah.
And we also got the big box set of the Descent into Avernus. Which is
the
really
minis,
cool.
Yeah,
the minis look really neat.
Just today, we also got a stock on... There's the Genesis RPG.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
They did a source book for Keyforge.
Oh, very cool.
Game. So there's that's the sort of last source book for that setting. But if you've been looking forward to that, we have that. So yeah, new stuff's coming in. The weird thing is, it's not like we get new games on this way. Just every day we get stuff. We got the TKO graphic novels.
Right, which is
a new publisher that's got like 8 different graphic novels by a variety. Roxanne Gay writes a crime graphic novel.
Yeah.
Garth Ennis has a Russian sniper graphic novel.
Doesn't Lemire have something?
Lemire has Sentient, which is about a sort of sentient ship. I don't want to give away that there's a big thing that happens in the first issue that basically winds up having this sentient robot having to watch over a ship full of people in a role it's not designed for.
Okay.
That just got nominated for an Eisner.
I was going to say, I thought I remember them getting a few nominations.
And there's a few others. There's a Western with a horror theme in it. There's 8 different graphic novels, a variety of talent. They're really pretty graphic novels, slightly oversized. Fancy flaps.
It sounds like this is a good time if you're looking for something a little off the beaten path that isn't your traditional superheroes.
Yeah.
This company, TKO, is someone to take note of.
Right. And I also think we'll be seeing more of that as the comics come out, too. Right now, the comics we'll talk about this week is mostly sort of the restart of where things were a couple months ago. We're definitely not getting our summer hits and all that kind of stuff. Everything's a little behind. But we're seeing, Vault Comics are going to really be putting out some new stuff recently, and I'm looking forward to some of that. I've read advanced copies of the next, 8 books they're doing, one of which is a Vampire the Masquerade comic.
Oh, very cool.
So they got licensed that, and it's a really good first issue, so that'll be coming out down the line sometime this summer. They've got, major names working on books. Joe Eisma has his first art from them.
Nice.
So, yeah, there's going to be some good stuff coming from them, so. But anyway, that's all store stuff. Let's talk about other news. That some of this is stuff that's been sitting in our news queue that we want to talk about, but some of it is new. Specifically, last week, we talked about how Ruby Rose was out as Batwoman.
Yeah.
And it sounds like kind of a, she decided she was done.
Yeah.
And it sounds like maybe they weren't cool with it.
Yeah.
Because they're killing her off.
Yeah. And this is all speculation. I've read a couple of think piece articles and a couple of it sounds like neither she nor the higher ups were very happy with one another, and yeah, it sounds like they're just kind of burning Kate Kane to the ground.
Yeah, they're like, well, you want to quit? You're not coming back.
Which I thought, I think I was talking over with Dave, and they were like, oh, well, she could come back somewhere down the road if she wants to. Guess not.
No, they're done. It's interesting because I think she did a good job as Kate Kane.
Yeah.
And I think people like Kate Kane. But I also think, to some extent, this is interesting because whoever they're going to recast, if they're going to put a new woman in the Batwoman role, that means basically they're creating a new character that doesn't exist in the comics.
I know. This sounded awful. It's like I really kind of just wanted them to use Stephanie Brown. Just do.
That'd be amazing.
Just do a Batgirl and turn it into a Batgirl.
Have you been watching, Nick? Have you watched much of Batwoman? I watched 2 episodes.
I watched a couple of episodes. I thought it was solid.
I have not watched much of it. But you know the girl who was like her ex, who was like the black woman, second in command at the Ravens or whatever they're called.
Yeah, her father's.
I wondered if she could be basically promoted up to Batwoman.
Yeah,
because that'd be interesting.
I mean, that would be cool. I've heard that it's like a new character completely.
Yeah,
so
I have no idea what they're gonna do. It's so odd.
It's a unique case. We've not seen this in any of the CW shows, so we'll see where it goes.
I don't know. I may check back in. I'm not watching most of the CW stuff, but I'm behind even on Stargirl, which I like the first 2 of quite a bit.
Yeah, I've watched the first 2 episodes of Stargirl.
All right, so let's talk about the Old Guard trailer. This is coming in August, July?
I think it's July or maybe the end of June. It's soon-ish.
So this is Greg Rucka and Leandro Fernandez's book about immortal soldiers.
Yes.
And they are immortal in that they don't always die. Sometimes they get back up, and sometimes they die, and they don't know when that's going to happen.
Right. It's just kind of a, it just happens. It's sort of a fate kind of thing.
And a sort of a new soldier wakes up immortal, and she is recruited by these immortals who have been around. Some of them have been like soldiers in the Roman Empire and going back further than that. and they're now like a mercenary unit.
And how they kind of live in the modern age, yeah. like dealing with, they've had their secrets, they've been around, but it's getting harder and harder for them to stay a secret.
Right, and that's the biggest thing. I think Rekka was fascinated by how you would hide immortality in this
yeah.
world of information and secret and, you know, identification and that kind of thing. That's interesting.
I think the comic is good. Yeah. I want the movie to be good.
Me too.
It's got Charlize Theron in the lead.
Yep.
So I'm already interested by that. I thought some of the other actors in the trailer looked good. I want this to be good. Me I too. Don't know if it will be.
The trailer didn't do a lot for me, to be honest. I was like, this is okay.
Yeah.
And if I didn't know it was a comic, I probably wouldn't bother watching it. It would look like a B-movie from Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll see.
Netflix has got this sort of rhythm with their movies, yeah. in the same way that like AMC has a rhythm for their shows.
Yeah,
it's sort of by the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, I'm hoping it hits the levels of, say, Bright, which is to say, good but not great.
Yeah,
I'd like it to be better than that, but I think that's more than I can hope for.
Yeah, I think those expectations are about where I'm.
Speaking of Netflix movies, we are seeing more major films, especially with the movie theaters being shut down.
Yes,
more major films are going right to Netflix. And Spike Lee's The Five Bloods is yep. coming out. Is it this week?
Yep, it is on Friday.
So this is a Vietnam. It's not a period piece. Like, these guys are all older. They're like yeah, modern day, right?
Yeah, it's modern day. They were military soldiers in Vietnam. They found some sort of cash of money or gold, and yeah. they're sort of going back. So it's got kind of a Three Kings-ish kind of...
I mean, that's a World War II trope as yeah. well. There's all the war movies have the soldiers finding some cash of gold and hiding right. it and going back years later. The interesting part of this is the cast, like yeah. Clark Peters from The Wire, Isaiah Whitlock Jr. from The Wire...
Chadwick Boseman. Delroy Lindo.
Yeah.
The cast is pretty stellar. It's Spike Lee, so I don't feel like it's going to be an aberration for Netflix in the sense that it's going to be different.
Right.
Because Spike Lee doesn't do kind of normal stuff.
Did you see Black Klansman?
I did. I loved
it. I liked it. I didn't love it.
Oh, really? I really enjoyed it.
Spike Lee is hit and miss for me. And, like, for everything that I really liked that he did, like, 25th Hour I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
There's something where I don't quite plug into it. Like his She's Gotta Have It
yeah.
show on Netflix, I didn't think was great.
Yeah.
So there's like he's hit and miss for me, but I think he's yeah. a talented filmmaker. I think at the very least it's gonna be entertaining.
I agree.
Yeah. I'm curious to check it out. Jumping over to Disney Plus, we didn't talk about this because there's really not much to say about it, but there is a National Treasure series in development.
Yes. Dave and I are giddy with the possibilities.
I don't think Dave's super giddy because it's going to be somebody besides Nicolas Cage.
He's got to be in there, though, right?
I don't know.
He's starting to do television. I mean,
is he?
I think he's going to do one of the Tiger King TV
right.
shows.
That's right.
And I feel like he was showing up in something else on TV. So yeah. I feel like he's going to make the jump. And yeah. then him being in a National Treasure TV series doesn't sound crazy.
Yeah, that'd be. I mean... I think it's a good premise for a TV show.
Yeah.
Have they already covered that territory in, like, The Librarians and that kind of stuff, though?
Yeah, but who watched... How many people watched The Librarians?
Not that many people.
I mean, it's a yeah. fun show, but...
And then HBO Max launched this last week.
Yep.
We'll talk about a couple... Well, one of the shows when we get to it. Overall, I wasn't that impressed. It feels schizophrenic to me. Like it doesn't know what it wants to be. It's got all the Ghibli movies.
Yep.
And then it's got stuff from... not Toonami, but...
Crunchyroll.
And then it also has Friends and Big Bang Theory.
It's sort of like a conglomeration of all of their kind of avenues of, like, entertainment. And
yeah.
they just sort of, like, shoved not every single thing, just only certain things.
The weird thing to me is, like, HBO was a brand.
Yeah.
And I feel like all they've done is diluted the HBO brand with this. Like... And, like, if you tell me, like, I had HBO Max for free because I was paying for HBO Now.
Yeah.
And no part of me was like, oh, maybe I'll drop HBO Now because there's so much good stuff on
yeah.
it. But HBO Max, I look at and I'm like, oh, I don't care about this.
I care in the sense that, I mean, I haven't messed with it a lot, but it's a great reservoir for, like, older movies. They
yeah.
did kind of grab all of the Criterion stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that. It's just kind of... All of Rick and Morty's on there.
Not all of Rick and Morty.
Oh, right. The new
that's
season
the
isn't.
The new season isn't, and I thought they would.
Like, yeah.
That's the frustrating thing. It's like, Cartoon Network still wants to hide their stuff away.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. But they're going to put, like, the DC stuff is moving on. Like, Doom Patrol's going to be on there.
Yeah.
And,
it's making it basically say that I no longer need the DC app.
Yeah.
Which is...
Stargirl's not on there, though.
Stargirl's is it not?
It's on CW, but it's not on HBO Max.
Ugh.
Like, they're not putting the longer-run Stargirl on there.
They just need to combine the two.
They do.
Just do it.
Harley Quinn, if they're going to do it.
Because all, like, the Batman movies and Superman movies are on HBO Max.
Yeah. There's some kind of internal office wars at Warner Brothers going on.
I've certainly read comics on the DC app, but that is not what people use that app
for. No, although I had been starting to read DC comics on the app.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a weird network. I'm not sure how to feel about it. Like, if I didn't already have it, I probably wouldn't have signed up for it.
It certainly didn't have the greatest launch stuff.
Yeah, but they did announce three shows recently.
Oh, okay.
They're doing Justice League Dark.
Right.
I can't remember. Is that live action?
I think it was.
The Shining spinoff.
Right.
Which is interesting because Dr. Sleep is finally hitting HBO this week, next week, I think.
Yeah.
I'll finally get a chance to watch that. And then J.J. Abrams has a show called Duster. Which I don't know exactly what that is. But so they've got new content development.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see where that goes. And Green Lantern's going to be on there.
Yep.
Like, I haven't figured out what they are yet.
No.
But I'm interested to see if they can sort of break... I mean, not everybody needs to know what your streaming service is right off the bat, if you can find a way around it. Disney launched strong with The Mandalorian, and that gives them a lot of leeway, even though they don't have anything good right now.
Hey, they're about to have, what, Artemis Fowl on Friday?
Artemis Fowl's going to be big. I mean, they're going to have Hamilton.
Yep.
But they, like, Disney is the identity of Disney Plus is not quite shaken out yet. It is very
right.
If you have kids, you want Disney Plus.
Yes.
Because that's where, like, the movies, like, Onward premiered on there.
Yep.
And all that kind of stuff. But
HBO Max is trying to be very flashy in the sense that we've got Friends, we've got Big Bang Theory, yeah. we've got things you want.
Yeah.
Come to us.
I was hoping with the Warner Brothers library, they would have some of the older stuff from Warner Brothers that, like, they have Friends, they have Big Bang Theory. I was hoping that some of their older stuff would be on there.
Yeah.
Like, didn't they do the Drew Carey show? Or was that not them? I thought they had a deeper catalog for TV than
I thought Drew Carey was NBC. Was it not?
It was NBC, but isn't that also a part of...
But that's Peacock.
Oh, right. That's what's going to cause all this. So.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
I do not know the licensing of NBC.
So here's the weird thing. I have no interest in the Peacock, but now I'm like, well, man, if they have, like, news radio and all that stuff, I might get the Peacock and not want HBO Max. It is so weird. The licensing, like, I shouldn't have to know who owns things.
Yeah.
I shouldn't need to care. But we're getting to the point, as they all watch these streaming services, that we have to know who owns
things. I guess
things.
I could get rid of the DC app and get the Peacock. If the pricing, because...
Yeah, we'll see.
Who knows?
Anyway. Alright, so let's talk comics for the week. Let's talk about... the comics for specifically June 10th, 2020.
Yep.
And we're just going to kind of run down. We're not really doing picks anymore.
Yeah.
There were about 50 books this week.
Yep.
Which is a small, we would have called that a tiny, tiny week before in the before times.
Yep.
But it's getting bigger. Like, this feels more like a regular week.
Right.
We had to change some stuff on the wall to get everything up there.
We're a little on, sort of like in a fifth week kind of.
Yeah, we're in fifth week mode constantly. And I think right now is a good time for people to exploring new stuff, especially if you want to check out some trades. We can recommend stuff to you.
Yep.
But this did feel like for Marvel, a return to form a little bit. There's some things out there.
Yep.
I know you had one of the X-Books.
Yeah, there's two X-Books. There's Excalibur and New Mutants,
yep.
Which I thought New Mutants was a lot of fun.
So a quick question on New Mutants.
Yeah.
Are those, the New Mutants, are they now braces for Mojo?
No, that is not Mojo. That is a new mutant that is kind of wreaking havoc in Russia. She is pulling people into her kind of this weird dream consciousness.
I see. But they are all braces.
On the cover, yes, they are all braces.
But that doesn't happen in the comic.
No, it does not happen in the comic.
Very disappointed.
But there is sort of like a Nightmare on Elm Street kind of vibe to
it. Okay, all right, yeah.
And then the other X-Book was Excalibur, which is dealing with... Betsy Braddock and her family, specifically Jamie Braddock, who can alter reality.
Alter reality going on in the X-Books this week.
Yes.
I, of course, was really happy. Daredevil came back out and has a big throwdown in Hell's Kitchen with Kingpin and Daredevil and Typhoid Mary and Rhino and Bullseye, and it's just super good. Chip Zdarsky's Daredevil was nominated for an Eisner this week and very much deserved that nomination. And then Black Cat sees her infiltrating Tony Stark to get some tech that she needs for a big heist, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. On the DC side of things, there's a couple Batman books that I would kind of recommend if you're into Batman. Mm-hmm. Batman 92 sees kind of the first... maybe not first, but a kind of introduction of Punchline.
Yeah, this is definitely the first thing for her, because she was in like one panel of 89.
And yeah, specifically her meeting Harley.
Okay.
And yeah. That's something. And then there's the Batman, Batman the Adventure Continues.
And then also there's the Secret Files, too, with like
there's Punchline's the Secret
in
Files.
There, Deathstroke's in there.
Right. And then the Adventure Continues, which is picking up where the Batman animated series left off.
Yeah.
This first adventure has Bane. It's got Lex Luthor.
I thought it was strange to throw in Luthor and Superman at the first place.
Yeah, I did too.
It's interesting. And it's notably, it's written by Alan Burnett and Paul Dini, who are the guys who sort of ran the show.
And then...
And art by Ty Templeton, who was the guy in the Batman Adventures book. So it's very much a throwback to when those books were so good.
Yeah. And then out of DC and into a Boom book.
Yeah.
This is probably one I was the most excited for, and it didn't disappoint. This is Brian Azzarello and Maria Lovett's Faithless. This is Faithless 2, number one.
This is Demonic Lesbians, right?
Yes, Demonic Lesbian. Demonic sex book. Let's just call it what it is.
Book. Okay.
Because sex is not just lesbian in here. It's right. Everyone. Beautifully drawn. It is a kinky book. It's fun. Beautiful, yeah, the art is just gorgeous, and I don't know, I keep loving it with every issue.
They put it in a trade this week, too, although yep. I think we've had the trade before, but
we
it's
have.
Like a new version.
Yeah, a new version of the trade.
Also, Boom has Something Is Killing the Children trade came back out this week.
Yes, this is the first time we've seen it, isn't
they
it?
They did what they call the Boom Now edition.
Oh,
they do
right.
A limited run for the direct market, and then this is the main book.
Yeah, but this is the first five issues of Something Is Killing the Children, which I can't recommend more.
I really need to read that.
It's dark, it's violent, it's very compelling, and yes, Something Is definitely killing the children.
Something Is Killing the Children. And there was also an issue of that this week.
Yes, the number six was
Dark Horse has Critical Role, The Chronicles of Exandria, which is basically like their big hardcover library editions.
Yeah.
And it is like art and behind the scenes and all that stuff for Critical Role. I've got a lot of those art books. I've got the Mass Effect one they did. I've got the ones they've done for Grendel and Usagi and all the ones they've done for Avatar. And I am sure that it's sealed, so I haven't looked inside it, but I'm sure it is a spectacular volume. They also did a library edition for Lady Killer.
Oh, right,
the first
yeah.
two series. If you like your big fancy hardcovers. And also, they're not bad. I think they're like $50 for a big chunk of hardcover.
Yeah. I think the fans of Critical Role will need that book.
Yeah. And then sort of the big release this week is Adventure Man.
Right. Which is Matt Fraction and the Dodsons on art. Their new book. Which feels kind of... This sounds derogatory to say that it's the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the movie version.
No, I get that. It's from Image.
Yeah.
It's $3.99 for like 80 pages.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's a giant book, and it's beautiful. But yeah, it is basically this sort of pulp team of, they open it with like, Adventure Man and the Brawler of the Bowery, who's so clearly Doc Savage.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's done some gender flips of, like, Airboy, and there's a ghostly Saint of the Burlesque, because it seems like a reference on the Ghost. He's not actually a pulp character.
No, but...
pulp-esque. And then, like, an immortal, and a magician who's, like, a Mandrake the Magician type.
Yep.
And they have this big throwdown in the opening. It's, like, a big apocalyptic, their infinite crisis for pulp heroes. And then jumps to the modern day... With a pair of women who maybe have that legacy to look after.
Yeah, it's fun. It's very if you like pulp, you'll definitely dig it. Fraction, if you like Fraction, I think you should definitely check it out.
Right.
I think the kind of fun pulpiness is really nice. It reminds me a little bit of like Rocketeer.
Oh yeah,
and,
for sure.
Having the Dodsons on art is never a bad thing.
Right. Yeah. No. It's... As Fraction says in his piece, he's like, look, take away all my words, and this is just a gorgeous book.
Yeah. And like you said, it's like 80 pages for $4. It's a steal.
Yeah. So, yeah. And there's there's more stuff, of course. We didn't cover everything, but if you're if you want to check out comics, they're back.
They are.
All right, so let's talk about topics. We want to talk about a couple of podcasts that we've been listening to. So I started listening to, I've been listening for a long time, the Reply All podcast, which I know I've talked about on here. And they started doing a side project called Scaredy Cats. So the Reply All is a couple of sort of techie guys, PJ and Alex.
Yep.
And PJ is a scaredy cat.
Yeah, he will he will not watch any horror movies at all.
And Alex is a horror fan.
Yes.
And in fact, like, watches them as comfort food.
Yeah, he will, if he can't sleep, he basically goes, lays down on the couch and watches a horror movie to fall asleep to.
PJ was like, okay, well, I guess I just don't watch horror movies. That's who I am as a person. But he started seeing, like, all these ads for good horror movies, like Get Out and that kind of thing. And he's like, I want to be able to watch these movies. So they started this thing where Alex is doing a... sensory, not deprivation, what is he calling it? An immersion?
Immersion,
doing an immersion program where basically he's having him watch horror movies.
Yes.
And then they come on the podcast and they talk about it.
Yeah.
And they bring on guests. And so the first guest they had was Jason Mantzoukas.
Which, the first movie that they threw him into the deep end.
Yeah, they threw him in the deep end.
They threw him into the deep end, that is The Exorcist.
Yeah, they started with The Exorcist, which, by the way, I'm scared of The Exorcist, and I watch horror movies, but that's a scary movie.
It is and it isn't in some ways. Yeah. I think it's built up because of, like, the reputation that it's gotten through, like, possession and the Roman Catholic Church and all this other stuff.
But it is also good.
It is also good. It's, I mean, William Friedkin, who directed it, is an amazing director. He doesn't do just kind of schlock or one note. It is a very character-driven story.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did a lot of starting and stopping. He FaceTimed with a friend to watch it.
Yeah, this led to them instituting Jason Mantzoukas, who is hilarious.
Yeah.
You've seen him. He's been on Parks and Rec. He's been on
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
He's on the How Did This Get Made podcast. He's hilarious. And he was like, he came in, he's like, look, I'm the first podcast guest, and that means he's going to make rules, right? And so they have the Mantzoukas rules now, where he has to watch them at night, he can't have a second screen, he can't stop and start.
He has to watch them alone.
He has to watch them alone. and they've been doing that, and that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because these shows, like, Alex usually knows the movie and has some details, and Mantzoukas did too. Whoever the guest comes on usually does some research. So they talk about some of the behind the scenes stuff of Friedkin,
yeah,
and how the movie was made,
and then, like, subsequent episodes, like, they have one of the person who from Nightmare on Elm Street who actually worked on the movies, the first six movies.
She talks about the special effects of it.
Yeah.
So it's Nightmare on Elm Street was the next one they did, and then Alien.
Yep.
And these are all movies I've seen, and all movies I think are really good. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street's not necessarily good, but does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, Wes Craven. I mean, he definitely, I mean, that's where he found his footing.
But it's interesting because, like, it's horror podcast is one thing. If you're just doing a deep dive into horror movies, that's one thing. But this is, like, not only a deep dive into sort of each movie, but it's also an examining about what makes them scary, what makes them good, and whether or not you can enjoy horror if you're not really a fan of horror movies. And it adds a twist to it. Like, and also, PJ and Alex have great chemistry. They sort of razz each other all the time. Yep. It's super fun.
His reaction to Alien, I thought, was really interesting.
Yeah, he liked it.
He did. He liked it.
And now they're going super deep end. They're doing a double feature of
Hereditary and Midsommar.
And Midsommar, which, by the way, I haven't seen because it looked too scary for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, that podcast, it's on the Apple Podcast, but also I think it drops early on Spotify.
Yes, it does.
And they advertised for a show called Wind of Change.
Yep.
Which is all on Spotify right now. It's still streaming through Apple. I've only listened to the first four. Or the first three, maybe?
Yeah, I binged it because I got to the one that they had just released, and I finished that, and I'm like, I'm just going to Spotify. I want to know how this ends.
So Wind of Change is broadly about... there's a Scorpions song that came out right about the time Berlin Wall fell.
Yep.
Called Wind of Change, that is basically an anthem about how things are changing in the Soviet Union.
Yes.
And they're a German rock band, and they were one of the first bands that allowed into the Soviet Union when they allowed rock music to sort of make its way in the 90s.
Yes.
And it turns out the guy who made this podcast had heard a story from his friend who used to work in the CIA, who heard from another friend that Wind of Change was a CIA plot. Basically, it was written by the CIA as psyops against the Soviet citizenry.
Yeah. It sounds like an absurdist idea.
It sounds so plausible, though, Nick. It sounds
now, but when you start kind of getting into to where the host is, and I forget his name, kind of what he delves into with, like, what the CIA has done with, like, psyops and, like, certain things and the avenues of that, and then it leads to some bonkers stuff. And it's just a very compelling listen. This is produced by Pineapple Street, who does a ton of good stuff. It's produced by
Crooked Media.
So it's not like this is just a joke.
No, what's interesting is that they go off on some interesting tangents where they sort of talk to people. They talk to someone who was in the CIA.
Yep.
They talk to people who are in the music business.
Yeah. There's even a weird G.I. Joe custom action figure convention.
Yeah. It starts from this interesting point and ranges about a bit, and it's super fascinating to listen.
Yeah. If that idea interests you, I highly recommend. It's, I think, 8 episodes. It's 8 or 10. I forget which. But it's well worth your time.
Also want to mention that Slowburn's coming back for a season 4.
Oh, very cool.
They're doing David Duke.
Oh.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting.
Slowburn's a good podcast.
Slowburn's great. And the last one with Biggie and Tupac was so good.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about TV from, I think, 4 different networks. So I finally broke and got Apple Plus, and the reason was twofold. One was I've been wanting to watch the Beastie Boys documentary.
Yep.
By Spike Jonze. Have you watched it?
I have not.
It's like a live theater experience in Brooklyn. Like,
I forgot it was Spike Jonze.
Yeah, Spike Jonze is directing it from, like, the booth, and then the two surviving Beastie Boys are on the stage talking about it. And there's like a multimedia behind them, and they show clips and they talk about the history of the band. And there's a lot of love for Adam Yauch, who died.
Yeah,
and they talk about their history and they talk about stuff I did not know, like the. Their original drummer was part of Luscious Jackson. There's all kinds of crazy stuff, and they talk about sort of like being in Def Jam Records and how they would like present like that they were early on. They were just these dumb kids doing this girl's song, and how they sort of had to apologize for some of that stuff. And then they look back and they were basically being presented as sort of these drunk frat boys, and their audience was not what they wanted, and they had to all mature. And it's really fascinating. It's such a good, and it's fun. And it's the music is great, the comedy is good. Like
I have to give this a shot. Delightful. I have Apple Plus, so
totally worth the watch. But the reason I finally broke was that Lauren Bouchard, who does Bob's Burgers, has a new musical comedy animated show called Central Park.
Okay.
They put the first 2 episodes up for free. I watched it and I was like, oh damn it, I have to see the rest of this. And I've watched the 3rd episode now and I'm like, I'm really glad. It's $5 a month.
Yeah.
So it is basically it's about a family that lives in the garden house in Central Park, and he's basically the guardian of the park. And he is voiced by, I want to say, David Diggs from Hamilton.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then his wife is a journalist, and she is voiced. Man, the voices in this are so good. So they have 2 kids. So it's a mixed race couple. Their kids are voiced by Titus Burgess, plays the boy. Kristen Bell voices the girl.
Okay.
David Diggs plays the lead guy, who is very much a, you know how Bob and Bob's Burgers is kind of a schlub.
Yeah.
He's sort of that kind of guy. He's a nerdy schlub. Catherine Hahn voices his wife.
Oh man.
And just like Catherine Hahn can sing, which is great. Josh Gad plays a busker who plays violin and also is the narrator and sort of spies on everyone. Leslie Odom Jr., that's the other guy from Hamilton, plays another guy in the park. Plays I think the butler or the servant to Bitsy Brandenham, the evil rich woman who lives across from the park and is trying to get them defunded, voiced by Stanley Tucci.
Sure.
There's more great voices and stuff in there, but the voice cast is spectacular. The music is really good.
Okay.
And it's super fun. Like I think the 2nd episode features a roller skating club that is having a beef with the lead character and a missing dog and all. It's super fun. It's got that same quirkiness that Bob's Burgers has. And if you took the music out, it would still be a really funny and fun show. Like, okay. The characters are good. But you added the music, and it's, for me, a guy likes musicals.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty spectacular.
I have to give this a shot. I think you'd mentioned it, and I was kind of half listening when you were describing it.
It's one of my favorite new shows.
We got Apple TV Plus for a couple of the other shows.
What are you liking on there?
I mean, we watched Defending Jacob. Apple TV is, like, gathering, like, really...
Their stuff all looks star, like very studded. Shiny and prestigious. Yeah.
Defending Jacob was okay. Yeah. I mean, it was Chris Evans and Michelle Dockery.
Is that a movie or a...
It was a mini... It was a series. It was like a seven or eight episode series.
Okay,
It was good. The one I liked the most that we watched on a whim was... I think it was called Home Before Dark, which is about, like, a journalist who kind of gets... shunned by his work, they move to a small town, back to his original hometown, and it's about a relationship between a father and daughter, and how they are so alike that she is kind of becoming a journalist herself, and it's a little like Harriet the Spy,
okay.
If it's like elevated a little bit more towards the adult. It was just really fun, really well done, and the cast is a bunch of people that you know. I can't remember off the top of my head. They're all good character actors, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah, I know there's a few things. Like, I watched a few episodes of The Morning Show. I couldn't quite plug into
it. Yeah, watch that.
Shyamalan has a show on there.
I haven't watched any of that yet. Octavia Spencer has a kind of podcast thing with, what's the guy from Breaking Bad? Not Heisenberg, Cranston, but Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul.
Yeah, Aaron Paul. They're not lacking for shows, and they've got a couple of movies. I think they've got, like, a Samuel Jackson Stock Market one.
Yeah, the banker.
That
was interesting. I saw trailers for that back when movie theaters were a thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they got rights. I don't know if it's up already, but the Tom Hanks, doesn't he have, like, a... I forget what it is, but it's, like, a true history kind of thing, what he does, that I think is coming or has already come out.
Huh. Yeah, there's a pretty wide variety. I mean, honestly, it's more original content than HBO Max.
Yeah, it's true.
And for $5 a month, it's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I'll keep it, but I'm definitely enjoying the watch. And Central Park alone, I would have paid the $5 a month.
Oh, and I will say there's one other show that I really, really enjoyed is the Emily Gordon and Kumail Nanjiani, Little America,
which
right now you should watch it. It's really good. It's about sort of... what other ethnic groups that it covers, from African American to it's not just a singer, but it's all about how they're coping with America and sort of dealing with kind of race relations, and it's uplifting. It's really, really nice.
Okay.
I love both Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon, and so the people that they kind of gathered around, they did a great job.
They talked about it on their Staying In podcast, which we talked about last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I didn't need to make sure I put that on the viewing list.
Yeah, there's an Indian family that runs like a hotel, and this kid, he's like 12, and his parents get sent back to India.
Oh, man.
And he basically has to take over running this hotel while, you know, dealing with life and trying to get his parents back, writing to, like, the president, vice president. There's a spelling bee. And it's all based on, like real... things.
Yeah.
So it's definitely worth watching.
Okay. Speaking of HBO Max, though, there was one new show. I mean, they've got a couple new shows. They've got new Looney Tunes cartoons, which everyone was going gaga about.
I haven't watched it, but
I wasn't into them.
Okay.
I watched a few. I wasn't crazy about them. And then, I don't know, maybe it's one of those things where if you're like a big animation head, you're like, oh, look how good the animation is.
Right.
But I was like, this isn't funny. I saw somebody oversold me. Somebody was like, these are as good as all the Pixar shorts.
I think what you need to do is you need to turn it on for Aaron. See if he likes it.
Maybe. Aaron's playing Fallout 4 now. He has no time for cartoons. You give me another season of The Mandalorian, I can get to watch TV again. But they also have the Not Too Late show with Elmo, which I'm curious to watch.
Yeah, I haven't delved into that one.
But their adult show is Love Life with Anna Kendrick, and it is sort of a... It's narrated in the style that reminds me of 500 Days of Summer. Sort of omniscient and somewhat snarky narrator.
Yep.
And it is about this one woman finding love, and she starts off being sort of a single girl. She hasn't had a relationship. She has her first major relationship. It's like each episode is another guy that she's dated. And it's interesting. As we watch her character develop and we get her roommates, but the new guys are brought in and it's sort of like a, here's how this relationship went and here's how this affected her and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it's great.
Yeah, vibe-wise for me, it was 500 Days of Summer meets Sex and the City.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
Maybe not as snarky as Sex and the City could be,
no, it's
but...
it's a little more sincere, yeah.
It's a little more sincere, but I think what drives it is Anna Kendrick.
Anna Kendrick's good.
She's just a good actor and a good person.
Yeah. I like her. The weird thing is, like... It's all well done and everything, but my guideline for like romantic comedy like this is stuff like Netflix's Love and
Amazon Prime's
Modern Love.
Modern Love is great.
There's one that Netflix had that's Easy.
Oh, I never watched that one.
Really good. Like okay. I want a good. Yeah, if you're gonna give me an anthology series, which is sort of an anthology series because it's about different guys, it's got to be stronger than this. And it's like I like it, but I don't think it has enough of a voice. It doesn't have enough to say.
Yeah, I can't remember who's like show running it or directing it.
I don't either. It's solid. The thing is, when I look at something like this, where like this is your show, like this is kind of like I look at the morning show on Apple Plus. I'm like, this is the show that you want people to be like, oh, I'm willing to pay for this show specifically. Yeah. I wouldn't pay $15 a month to see Love Life.
No.
And I feel like that's the thing is like if you're launching and if you're launching original content, you should have your strongest foot forward when you launch your new show. Like I say, Disney Plus with The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
That was a show where, like, yeah, I will pay the money. If you had nothing else on this network and you just said, here's the money you need to pay me so you can watch The Mandalorian, I would have paid for that.
Yeah.
Your show needs to be at that level, and I don't think Love Life is there. I'm enjoying it. I'll watch the rest of it.
I have HBO Max because I pay for HBO for cable.
Same. Yeah.
But I would do it if I wanted the backlog of movies.
Yeah.
Original content I would just do for Disney Plus.
They've got a solid library, but it's not necessarily for me. So let's jump over to Hulu, where I don't think they have any new originals that have jumped out at me. I guess I've been watching a couple of the FX shows, but you have been watching. You discovered, Nick, and this is gonna be dangerous for both of us, that they have the entirety of Top Chef on Hulu.
Yes,
and I've only seen Top Chef starting with like the first All Star season, which I think was like season 9.
Okay, so yeah, I am watching from the beginning. So I am up to season 3, midway through. I could say Kaylee and I are addicted. And so, she had no interest.
So watching it now, do you see all the story threads from Top Chef 1 that led to Top Chef 15? Do you see the background characters who became really big players? Did you see the heel turn from Marcel as he became the big villain of the piece?
Oh, does Marcel continue?
Oh, Marcel's the worst. He comes back for, like, All-Star, and he's the worst.
The one person who's come back occasionally is the sommelier, and I can't remember his name.
I don't either.
Matthew, maybe?
Maybe.
And he's shown up periodically through the 3 seasons, and I hated him in the first season because he was kind of that asshat.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of love him now. He's sort of found himself a little bit.
Yeah.
And is less asshole-ish, and it's just fun. But, like I said... I kind of had seen a couple of episodes here, but I weirdly was the Iron Chef person.
Okay,
I watched a lot of Iron Chef.
Okay.
Both the Japanese version and then the American version with Alton Brown. That was a big one for me because I loved Alton Brown. But Top Chef is hosted by Tom Colicchio. Is it Padma?
Padma Lakshmi.
Padma Lakshmi.
I want to say she's married to someone notable.
She didn't start out. The first season was not Padma. It was...
Oh, really?
It was another woman who now is on Food Network's The Kitchen, which is kind of their compilation chef.
Oh, she was married to Salman Rushdie.
Oh, okay.
For 3 years.
Yeah.
Padma... I love Padma. I can't imagine Top Chef without Padma.
This is going to sound mean. She has the best resting bitch face ever.
She does. She's amazing. Yeah.
And then it's... they finally brought on... Oh, God, why am I blanking? He hosts Chopped.
Oh, that guy?
Not Gordon Ramsay.
No. The guy who hosts Chopped? Top Chef?
Yeah, he is one of the judges with season 3, and
so
he's shown up.
Gail has not shown up, right?
No.
Because Gail from Food & Wine...
No, Gail's been there from the very beginning.
She's okay.
Yeah, she's Food & Wine. She's one of the critics.
Okay.
She was on there, and then they brought in... But... throughout the first couple of seasons, it's interesting of like guest judges because some people you recognize, mm-hmm. and then of course, you kind of get your heart broken a little bit because Anthony Bourdain shows up a couple of times because he's friends with Tom Colicchio,
yeah, sure,
and it's he is like they bring him on when they do like a these weird assortment of meats from various like alligator and rattlesnake because Anthony Bourdain ate anything,
yeah,
and. He was telling the quickfire, or no, it was the quickfire. The person who won that got all of Anthony Bourdain's books that he had scribbled in, and he got to go out with him on a night of debauchery in New York.
Oh man!
And I'm just like, that would be amazing to do. Yeah. But
Top Chef, like, I think you and I are not huge reality fans.
No.
You watch probably a little more than I do because you got HGTV and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and my wife is addicted to all things Real Housewives. So.
But, oh my God.
Everybody has their outlet.
Yeah, but I'm not a reality guy in general, but Top Chef, when I got into it, I fell in love with. And for those who don't know, basically Top Chef is, they bring in, I think, like 16 chefs to start with?
15 or 16, and
then they whittle them down week by week. They do a quick fire, which is like some kind of challenge where they have to put together something in a short time, some kind of challenge they do. They cook that. There's usually at the beginning, if you win the quick fire, you get immunity. They're in the elimination challenge, which is the second part of the show, and then somebody goes home. And then every season they do something called Restaurant Wars, which is one of the big things where basically the teams of chefs that have been whittled down to usually like six people each or five people each, something like that.
Yeah, usually like four or five per team.
It's usually 4 or 5 weeks in. They each have to basically create a restaurant and run a restaurant that night. So they
from
have to
scratch.
Concept, decoration, menu. One of the poor chefs has to be front of house and has to basically be the maitre d' and all that stuff.
None of them have any experience.
It's the worst role.
Yep.
And then one of them is like becomes the head chef and basically gets blamed if everything's not going well. And it's like, yeah, it's such a fun thing to watch it build up to. And they do shopping at like Whole Foods and they show them do the shopping. They usually film at a location. Like, they've done a Texas season, a New York season, a New Orleans season.
Because, they did. The ones I've seen are like San Francisco, and they do a different place.
And they'll spotlight local restaurants. Like, they'll go to those restaurants and imitate those chefs. It's such a celebration of chef culture and foodie culture. And I am right smack in the middle of all that. Like, it's usually fancier than I would eat.
Yeah.
But it always looks good.
Some of the quickfires, though, is, like, make a meal out of something you get out of a snack machine.
Yeah.
Or things like that. And I'm just like...
It's not quite as wild or crazy as Chopped Cutthroat Kitchen.
No, but they do devise some pretty elaborate schemes.
And part of it is, like, it is a celebration of craft. It is a celebration of... These people are very good at what they do. They're all, like, top of the line, have restaurants.
Yeah.
This is not just, like, they randomly grab some people off the street. This is people who know how to cook.
Yeah.
And Colicchio's a great host.
He is.
He's personable. He's funny. He's got that sort of mean drill sergeant thing, but also like the dad thing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
One of our customers used to work for Tom Colicchio and tells us he's a great guy, which I was so happy to hear.
Yes.
Because you always worry about that.
Yeah.
And I love Tom Colicchio in this. I love Padma in this. And I'm definitely going to go back and watch it all.
I love the fact that I have like 15 or 16 seasons to get through.
Yeah. It's good comfort food TV.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's talk real quick about Netflix. One new thing. Nick, you watched all of Space Force, which is Greg Daniels and
Steve Carell,
The Office. Steve Carell.
Steve Carell helped write it. John Malkovich. It is about Space Force, which is Trump's stupid new
It's a parody of...
Yeah.
Basically, Steve Carell is the loser general who gets attached to Space Force.
Yes. And kind of... It's humorous, but it's...
Steve Carell has, like, two modes. He has sort of dumb guy mode.
Yep.
And screamy guy mode.
Yeah.
And he has combination mode. Like, Michael Scott was screamy dumb guy.
Yes.
And then there was, like, his role Brick in Anchorman, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Where he's just kind of a dumb guy.
Yep.
I prefer dumb guy Steve Carell to dumb guy who thinks he's smart guy Steve Carell.
Yep.
And this is very much dumb guy who thinks he's smart guy Steve Carell.
Agreed. I think the show has definitely got a lot of minuses.
Yeah.
And I am there for Carell and Malkovich and when they're on screen together.
The two of them are great together.
That chemistry is great. And every once in a while when they do like a chief of staff meeting and you get people like Jane Lynch.
The cast is amazing.
Oh man. Diedrich Bader. Yeah, why am I blanking on Putty's actual name?
I'm blanking on it too. You said Putty, yeah. And now he's also the Tick.
Yes. So, I mean, there are instances that I'm just like, this is hilarious. And then there are weird kind of times I'm like, this is weirdly dramatic or really weird. Like, Lisa Kudrow plays Steve Carell's wife.
Who's in jail?
Who's in prison.
Why is she in jail? Can you please tell me? I watched 3 episodes, and I'm not going to watch any more of this, but I really want to know why his wife's in jail.
I can't tell you.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Can you tell me off, Mike?
I will try to remember, because actually I can't remember. Okay. I don't think it was that memorable.
The third episode does have a bit where they have to try to repair their ship, and there's a monkey and a dog, and that was some funny stuff. It's dark, yes. It's dumb, but it was kind of funny.
Okay, actually, that might be the pinnacle of the...
Oh, good, then I'm glad I stopped.
Yeah,
that you was stopped at a good spot. The show. That was like that was the stuff I liked.
Because it even ends on a very weirdly, like, drama note. It's just...
It's such a strange thing.
It is. If you like the actors, check in, see if you like the first couple of episodes.
Yeah.
I watched it because it's a 20-25 minute episode series, or 20 right. per episode, and it's just like... I can do that. And it was only 8 episodes. Yeah. So it was really short. And I like to just sit on the couch.
On Netflix, I watched the rest of Dragon Prince. I finally caught up with Dragon Prince, which I've been watching. Because I watched Avatar and I watched bits of Korra. And I'm like, oh yeah, there is some stuff from these guys that I haven't finished.
Yeah.
And so I went and watched season 3. And season 3 is could have been the final season. Like, it's got the big climactic confrontation. It's got them seeing the Dragon Queen. It's like, it's got some big stuff in it.
Yeah.
But there's a teaser at the end that they're definitely doing another season.
Okay.
But it's super good. The lead characters, the lead human and an elf, there's a good relationship there. The young boy who is basically the new human king, they give him some really good stuff to do. It's the animation has definitely stepped up from where it was in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what Avatar is like, sort of a Asian themed. This is very much European fantasy with castles and elves and dragons and that kind of stuff. But it has the same care and approach and sense of humor and action that you would expect from Avatar. So definitely worth a look.
Yeah, I remember loving the first season. I need to check back in.
All right, I think that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.